Hi, folks. Be sure to visit my website at dr-history.com for a short personal video message, to listen to the latest stories, and to leave a comment.
Right now, we're going to turn everything on and visit with... You weren't here last week. How's your wife doing, by the way?
She's doing better, and good. I've got to say something today, Zeb. Today is a very special day. It's my anniversary.
No.
And I want to tell my sweet wife, happy anniversary. Whatever you want to, wherever you want to go eat today, we're going. 43 years, Zeb.
Well, you're still 7 behind us.
Oh, okay.
We're celebrating 50 this year.
I'm glad I'm not as old as you, Zeb.
Don't rub it in. I have the power of the switch of the microphone.
That's true.
You're lovely bride. 43 years.
43 years, yep. Okay. It's been great.
Did you put a cap on the spending, though, and say you can go anywhere to eat as long as it's a drive-in or something? Or?
No cap. Wherever you want to go. McDonald's, Wendy's, you name it.
You're not going to spare any quarters, are you?
No, I'm not.
Okay. What are we going to talk about today?
Well, I got to say hi to a few people first. I want to say hi to Larry, and, I really appreciate listeners giving me suggestions.
Mm-hmm.
So he gave me the suggestion of something called the Great Diamond Hoax that happened in 1872 in Northwest Colorado. So I'm going to look up that and see what that's all about. Josh, over in BC, Canada, he suggested one called Cataline. And evidently this guy was a legendary packer up in Canada. So I'm going to look that up. And then I had a veterinarian by the name of Max call me, or email me, because I talked about buffalo, how hard it is to shoot them right in the head and kill them. And he explained to me where to place the bullet between the eyes and below the horns to kill a buffalo.
Well, now, the Indians, when they were hunting a horseback, they used to shoot arrows into the neck area, didn't they?
Well, or the lungs.
Yeah.
Yeah. So, yeah. And then Brian, I want to say hi to Brian, and he's in Tennessee.
Well, my goodness. The volunteer state.
Yeah. So we've got some good listeners out there, and I appreciate suggestions for stories. I've got a pretty good list now that I need to start going down and doing those stories.
You thrive on this stuff. Your eyes just start to light up. You look like a cheap neon sign.
Thank you.
Okay.
It's a good thing this is radio.
Okay.
So today's, Zeb, this March is honoring women in history month.
Right.
Last week I talked about Louise Sherman. Up in Coeur d'Alene. Today, I'm going to talk about a woman they call the Pocahontas of Georgia. And as I go along, you'll see why she deserves to be up there with Pocahontas.
Okay.
So we're going to go clear back to 1700, so a long time ago.
So, about the time you were born.
Right in there, yeah. But, from a very young age until the end of her life, Mary Musgrove Bosomworth, as she is remembered in history, was basically in two worlds, her Indian heritage and her white way of life. She lived like the English with regard to her home, her clothing, marriage, her political activity, but she remained strongly connected to the Native American people. And kind of the sad thing is, Zeb, she was kind of misunderstood by both cultures, both the white culture and the Indian culture. But the circumstances that thrust Mary into history started in England in 1729. So now she's almost 30 years old.
Oh, my.
General James Oglethorpe, a soldier, secured a commission from King George II to establish the colony of Georgia. So Oglethorpe hoped it would serve as a haven for, Europe's people, the debtors, the religious refugees. So the king signed the charter on June 9th, 1732. So now in November 1732, Oglethorpe left England with about 120 colonists. The ship stopped in South Carolina. Oglethorpe and a few others paddled their boats up the Savannah River. He spotted a bluff that would that overlooked the river, and he thought, well, that'll be a good location for a settlement. So the Indian tribe, the Yamacraws, are a split-off group of the Creek Indians.
And this is where, in Georgia?
In Georgia, yeah, and South Carolina. So anyway, this Yamacraw Indian tribe lived about 3 miles from this bluff that he was looking at. Now, their chief was named Tomachichi, and he greeted the English, but Oglethorpe wanted to ask permission for his band to settle on this bluff, but neither of them spoke English, so the chief sent for Mary Musgrove. Now, she was the daughter of his sister, and the Indians had given Mary the title of princess. Well, Mary spoke English really well and translated between the two leaders. In addition, she helped ease the Indians' objections to the English settling there.
So she had an English name, but she was...
Half Indian and half white.
I see.
Yeah. So she knew, and I'll explain how she grew to learn English. But anyway, Oglethorpe hired Mary and agreeing to pay her 100 English pounds per year. Now, that was a lot back then. I'm going to say that had to be... maybe $250 in American, yeah. But anyway, the general made her the go-between between them and the Creek Indians and her tribe. So Mary was not very big, 5 feet tall, 100 pounds, and by now she's 33 years old. She had hair that hung down in two long braids, and she stuck a feather into a band of beads she wore across her forehead. Kind of get the picture of this very petite, sweet Indian woman with a feather in her band there. Anyway, her story starts in the settling of South Carolina when the English settled Charleston, South Carolina, in 1670. The Creek Indians actually welcomed them to get protection from other Indians and from the Spanish friars who were there trying to convert the Indians. So they kind of got together with them. Now, the Creeks' loyalty to the English did not last long. In 1715, they joined forces with their relatives, the Yamasees, and I hope I'm saying that right.
No, you're on your own.
The Yamasee tribe, yeah. To attack Charleston. And this started what they called the Yamasee War. Well, the attack was a failure. The Creeks then sought Cherokee help to pursue another attack. But the Cherokee aligned with South Carolinians against the Creeks. And they signed a peace treaty with the Carolinians. And the Creeks and the Carolinians began to trade in 1718.
So this was all at the same time that our forefathers were planning and getting ready to go ahead with the Revolutionary War.
Yeah, starting, you know, it was heading that direction. Yeah. So Mary was born around 1700, and her father was more likely a guy by the name of Edward Griffin, who was a licensed trader. When she was between the ages of 7 and 10, Mary's father took her to South Carolina. She was baptized and educated as a Christian. She learned to speak English and was given the Christian name Mary. Now, in 1716, so here she is 16 years old, the government of South Carolina sent Colonel John Musgrove to negotiate the treaty that would end the Yamasee War. Now, he had a son named John Musgrove, Jr., and he went along with his father, and he fell in love with this beautiful Indian princess and asked her to marry him. Well, the marriage took place in 1717, so she's 17 years old, which was not abnormal, you know, 1617 to get married. Now, although Mary actually married two more times, she is best known today by the name of Mary Musgrove.
I see.
Now, the newlyweds lived among the Cherokee in Georgia for several years. Then they went back to South Carolina about 1723, and they lived there for another 7 years. They had two sons, Edward and James. They relocated in 1732 to where Savannah, Georgia is now, right in that area.
I see.
Now, this was a year before this General James Oglethorpe founded the Georgia colony. So the couple opened a trading post. Mary was very good at business. She had really good business skills. The trading post grew 1/6 of Charlestown's annual export. 12,000 pounds of deerskins passed through the Musgroves trading post. They also owned cattle, so they had a very thriving business going there between the trading post and the cattle.
And what year was that?
That would have been 1732.
I see.
Right in there. So when Oglethorpe settled the new colony of Georgia, he gave Mary gifts to become her friend. Now, those new settlers had to establish relations with the local Indians and those in South Carolina. So Oglethorpe often called on Mary to interpret and negotiate between his government and the Indians. So Mary used her influence to convince the Yamacraw, which was her tribe, part of the what did I say?
Creek.
Creek. had a little, anyway.
I get those bubbles a lot.
Let me start over.
Okay.
Mary used her influence to convince the Yamacra, which was her tribe, Indians, to cede a portion of their land to the colonists.
I see.
Oglethorpe admired and trusted her so much that he began to regularly seek her for advice. Now, both Georgia and South Carolina tried to have the upper hand in trade with the local Native Americans in the rum trade.
Ah.
Okay. Mary helped Georgia win that rivalry. So now, 1734, Mary again used her influence when she interpreted at the meeting between Choctaw Chief Red Shoes and Georgia's leaders. 2 years later, when tensions arose, Oglethorpe again asked Mary to serve as an interpreter at a meeting with Chigilly, leader of the Lower Creeks tribe. And 2 or 3 years after the Musgroves moved to Georgia, John, her husband, died.
Oh, he did?
Yeah. So here she is. She's, what, 34, 33 years old.
Yeah.
She has these two boys, but her first husband died. So Mary had a home in Savannah. She had 1,400 acres of land. She also held an important position in the colony because of her relationship with Oglethorpe and her ability to provide supplies to the early settlers. So to see how much she helped those colonists when they didn't have much.
Really?
You know? Well, she didn't stay single for very long. She soon married a guy named Jacob Matthews. Well, the marriage to Mary completely changed this guy. He had another side to him. He was quarrelsome. He was given to drink. Not a very good guy.
Well, so. They were dealing in rum. What do you expect?
Well, I guess he sampled too much of the goods.
Okay.
Well, anyway, Mary's influence in the colony continued during her 5-year marriage to Jacob Matthews. Oglethorpe asked Mary to start a second trading post on the south side of the Altamaha River to help protect Georgia against Spanish invasion. So what Mary did, she would look out for suspicious Spanish movements and try to warn the colonists if the Spanish looked like they were heading up the river to maybe attack.
I see.
So anyway, she aided in concluding treaties and in securing Creek warriors to fight with the British against Spain in the War of Jenkins' Ear. That was 1739 through 44. Mary influenced the Indians to side with Oglethorpe, and she even sent her own workers that worked for her into battle. And Creek warriors went with Oglethorpe when he attacked the fort at St. Augustine, but they were defeated. It didn't work out really good. So here we are, 1738. A group of Creeks gave Mary a title to 3 offshore Georgia islands. And I'm going to try to pronounce them, okay?
Here we go.
The island of Sapelo.
Uh-huh.
Osaba.
Uh-huh.
And I've got this one down. St. Catharines.
out of 3.
Yeah. Anyway, they
that'll get you in the whole thing.
They also gave her a tract of land. Now, her husband, Jacob Matthews, became ill in 1742, and although Mary took him to Savannah for medical care, he died, which I can't imagine was too sad of a situation.
Yeah, but you know, now she's 2 husbands and 2
yeah.
deaths, and one might look at her a little quizzically.
Okay, well, it doesn't end there, Zeb.
Oh, my.
Okay. So anyway, so while she was gone taking care of her husband in Savannah, the Indians came in and demolished her unprotected trading post. They took away her cattle, and they raided the trading post, so she came back to really nothing. But she continued to barter with traders. She sold colonists meat, bread, and other foods that were sorely needed in those early years before the colonists began to produce their own things for themselves.
Yeah.
And a lot of the colonists, get this, never paid their bills. So she basically gave away a lot of her produce.
Mm.
So now we're 1743. She's 43 years old. Oglethorpe left Savannah, giving Mary a going-away present, one of his own diamond rings. And he promised her 100 pounds a year to continue as interpreter. Well, Mary didn't remain widowed for very long. She married an Englishman named Thomas Bosomworth in 1744. Bosomworth.
Uh-huh.
Don't forget that name.
I'm not.
Thomas.
Okay.
Well, Thomas Bosomworth worked as a clerk. He was later appointed as Secretary of Indian Affairs, and he was a good guy. I think he was okay. So now Oglethorpe is gone. Mary continued to help the colony during the War of the Austrian Succession. She worked successfully to convince the Creeks not to respond to the French appeal for help. During the Creek-Cherokee War in 1747, she persuaded the Creeks to remain loyal to the English. Now, after Oglethorpe left, the relationships between Mary and the colonists kind of turned bad. Things were not looking good. First, the colonists no longer treated Mary with her former respect, and she kind of felt insulted. Mary also felt angry about the lack of payment for the goods and services she'd provided.
Well,
she never
yeah.
got paid. So, but she had continued to interpret for the leaders with no payment. And when she asked for payment, that's when things kind of broke down between their relationship. It got a little bit strained. So a major conflict occurred when Mary and Thomas, her husband, Bosomworth, attempted to lay claim to the property that Mary had received earlier from the Creeks. You know, the three islands
right.
And the other grant.
Right.
So Georgia leaders denied Mary's claim to ownership of those three islands. Now Thomas, her husband, he was not going to just sit back. Influenced by his wife, that she'd been wronged by the colonists. So in the history of Georgia, there's a guy by the name of Stevens, and here's what he wrote about her. He says, quote, "Hitherto the career of Mary had been one of generous self-denial and of unmerited labors for the good of the colony. She had not indeed received the full reward of her services, but she rested in security on the faith of the government and was until her marriage with Bosomworth quiet in her conduct and moderate in her demands." So she was kind of an easygoing lady.
Absolutely.
Up until now.
Uh-oh.
So up until 1743, Mary had received only about $1,000, so after all those years, maybe 3 years' worth of pay.
Holy okay. smokes.
So she did have a justifiable claim, and however it came about, Mary's attitude toward the colony kind of shifted, and Bosomworth, he stirred up the colony with his attempts to get compensation for her property and what she'd done. Well, the Creeks supported Mary in her claims and threatened to block any further colonial settlement in the areas under the Creek Colonial Treaty of 1739. Well, her husband took documentation to England, hoping the king would recognize Mary's ownership of those islands. Well, feeling that her cause could be pursued more favorably in person, Mary and Thomas sold some of their property to raise cash, and they actually traveled over to England.
Hmm.
Now, 1754, so now she's 54 years old. They made their trip to England. To their disappointment, the Board of Trade rendered a decision in 1759 that disallowed their claims. When they returned to Georgia, Mary accepted a compromise in 1760, and it was kind of a compromise. Both parties were somewhat satisfied.
I see.
But not totally.
Yeah.
So the colony council and governor resolved the issue by giving Mary title to one of the islands, St. Catherine's Island. And they actually paid her for the sale of the two other islands. So she now had an island and was paid for the other two. So when she acquired St. Catherine's plus her earlier properties, actually she was the largest landowner in Georgia.
Really?
Largest landowner. So they were well off. They had enough money to build a grand home on St. Catherine's Island, and that's where they lived until Mary's death in 1765. So, you know, that's kind of unusual, too, to live to be 65 years old.
Yeah.
Mary was a remarkable woman. She exercised extraordinary influence not only in Creek-Georgia relations, but also as an emissary of South Carolina. Few women in her time approached her level of importance. So Mary, Musgrove, Matthews, Bosomworth rose to become an outstanding leader.
Hmm.
And here's what they said in one of the newspaper things, quote, "She was a woman without equal in the Carolina-Georgia frontier and who contributed profoundly not only to the success of the colony of Georgia, but to the success of the Carolina ventures as well." So you know, some consider her one of the most important figures in Georgia's colonial history and an outstanding woman. And she undoubtedly provided a great deal of help to Oglethorpe during the development of Georgia. And things would have gone a lot different if she hadn't been there to kind of ease tensions between the Indians and the new colonists. So when we say she was kind of the Pocahontas of Georgia, that kind of makes sense now, doesn't it?
And she died at 65.
65, in 1765, yeah.
1765. Yeah, and so if she would have been alive another 11 years, that would have been interesting through the Revolutionary War.
Exactly, yeah. And makes you wonder how she would have fit into that.
Yeah.
She was somewhat loyal to the English, but that was kind of spoiled a little bit, too.
Yeah.
So I kind of think she would have sided with her Indian tribe.
Interesting. And, you know, really, you would have thought that her Indian tribe would have been basically her collection agency.
Yeah. I mean,
seriously.
Yeah. Because she was not treated well.
Yeah.
But like I said, she was kind of in between both cultures, being Native American and white.
Because she could have showed up with about 10 or 20 braves and said, what do you mean you don't have the money?
Yeah, what have you got?
Yeah,
I'll take some of those cows out in your corral.
There you go. Good story.
That was good. I'm going to try to find another good story for next week about some of the, to me, famous people that are not famous and not well known.
Okay.
Because I'm going to bet very few people have heard about Louise that I talked about last year.
Right.
And Mary Musgrove, probably those down in Georgia, South Carolina.
Yeah.
I'm going to guess probably have heard about her, but it makes you wonder all the people that have been lost to history that their stories need to be told.
Absolutely. And you are the man to do it.
I am the man.
Thank you.
As humans, we're naturally driven by the search for better. But when it comes to hiring, the best way to search for a candidate isn't to search at all. Don't search, match with Indeed. When I was looking to hire someone, it was so slow and overwhelming. I wish I had used Indeed. If you need to hire, you need Indeed. Indeed is your matching and hiring platform, with over 350 million global monthly visitors according to Indeed data, and a matching engine that helps you find quality candidates fast. Ditch the busy work. Use Indeed for scheduling, screening, and messaging so you can connect with candidates faster. And Indeed doesn't just help you hire faster. 93% of employers agree Indeed delivers the highest quality matches compared to other job sites, according to a recent Indeed survey. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/podcast. That's Indeed.com/podcast. Terms and conditions apply.